You're now listening to the Engage the Rockies podcast, your go-to podcast for local and state issues concerning Colorado.
Hello, Colorado. This is the Engage the Rockies podcast. I am your host, Jarvis Caldwell, Executive Director of Engage the Rockies. Today, we're talking private versus public ambulance services, specifically in Colorado Springs. Now, we've covered a lot of topics on this podcast, from the migrant crisis to charter schools to property taxes. And I will admit, this is maybe the first subject that we've come across that I just don't have a lot of background myself on this issue. And so when we were looking for somebody to come on and talk about this, we could not think of anyone better than Mr. John Southers. So if you don't know, Mr. John Southers originally served as district attorney for the 4th Judicial District in Colorado starting in 1988. In 2001, President Bush appointed Mr. Southers to be the United States Attorney for Colorado, and he was unanimously confirmed by the U.S. Senate. He served as Attorney General of Colorado from 2005 to 2015. Most recently, Mr. Southers was elected twice as the mayor of Colorado Springs, where he served in that capacity from 2015 to 2023. Mr. Southers, thanks so much for joining us.
Glad to join you, Jarvis. And this is an important issue, and I appreciate you contacting me on it.
Absolutely, sir. So when somebody had first brought this subject up to me and I started doing my research on it, the most I could find was like a pretty recent Gazette article. I think maybe KRDO and a few other local news outlets had some kind of short stories on it and updates over the last couple months. But I'll be honest with you, I don't know if I still fully grasp the subject. So my first question to you, sir, is can you kind of give the audience a big picture overview of how Colorado Springs currently contracts its ambulance services?
Yeah, Colorado Springs has for many, many decades privately contracted for emergency transport or ambulance service. And I think it's either a 3 or 5 year contract period. I think maybe it's 5. And you go out to bid and companies bid for it. And you go through a procurement process and award contract a winner. For the last several contract periods, the winner has been American Emergency Response, or AMR, which is a large ambulance provider on the private level. When about 2020 or so, the last time we went out to bid, the fire department approached me as mayor and asked whether they could also tender a bid at that time to have us consider whether or not moving to a government run by the fire department emergency transport. Because as you know, the fire department engages in emergency response for all types of tragedies, including medical emergencies. Mm-hmm. And they thought it would be, given the performance, which we'll talk about in a moment, of AMR, yeah, they thought it would be appropriate for them to be considered to take over the contract. At that time, I listened very carefully, and I have to tell you, this is a national issue. This debate is going on across the country, and frankly, more and more cities are going to having their fire departments deliver emergency transport, take over the ambulance service. In Colorado, for example, Denver, the fire department does it. In Pueblo, Colorado Springs, Greeley, and Aurora, it's still done on a private basis. When I reviewed it 3 years ago, actually it could have been 5 years ago, it was my determination. I felt like the fire department made a very good case that they could probably do it better. When we contract with a private ambulance company, typically the contract has some penalty clauses in it that if they don't respond within a certain period of time, they pay a penalty. And over the years, particularly in the post-COVID years, and of course, AMR blames this a lot on their staffing, they have paid some fairly substantial penalties for not meeting response time requirements. Interestingly enough, Jarvis, that hasn't resulted in a lot of consumer complaints. When I was mayor for 8 years, I never had a single consumer complaint that, oh, gee, the ambulance company didn't show up and my Uncle Harry died of a heart attack right. or something like that. How the fire department explains that is they typically show up first and mm-hmm. they begin emergency resuscitation or whatever's. And if the ambulance company shows up 2 minutes later, 3 minutes later, you know, the person's been attended to, is ready to be transported. But the fire department makes the case, gee, we're there first anyway. We think we could be there first with an ambulance. If we were sending an ambulance, in a lot of those cases, we wouldn't be sending a fire truck and we could be more efficient. Frankly, I was fairly convinced by their efficiency arguments that they could be more efficient. My concern was the cost part mm-hmm. of the equation. The model that the fire department presented at that time was that they would be able to essentially hire all the private ambulance company people onto the city payroll. Obviously, the greater benefit that they would have would be a defined benefit pension or para pension, which they don't have in the private sector. But they were fairly confident that they could maintain a civilian ambulance personnel classification in the fire department, separate and apart from the sworn fire folks, firefighters and paramedics, and that they could keep this lower cost model. Of course, the first question is, aren't you going to have the same staffing problems if you're not paying substantially more? And then I also have some experience with labor issues, and I'm not sure that once these folks get into the fire department and the local five union starts talking to them and trying to make them dues-paying members, that we would be able to maintain that separate type of structure. So I had a lot of issues about the cost. And initially, at that point in time, when it was up the last time, rejected, and we renewed the fire department's request and renewed AMR. Well, now the contract is up again in 2025, and the fire department pursuing with the city, once again taking over the ambulance service. I actually think they've done a little bit better job on their cost numbers and things like that. I do think they've mm-hmm. done a lot of research. Interestingly enough, there's some federal money that's available to ambulance services run by cities that's not available to private entities. But I still have some questions about the cost model. One of the complicating factors is the fire department maintains that not only can they be more efficient, but they can actually do it for less. And they point out that they've come to the conclusion that the fire department basically, or the ambulance company, doesn't put more ambulances on the road because it's a cost of doing business to pay these fines, and they're still making quite a bit of money. It's complicated by the fact that AMR, of course, is a private company and has not allowed access to their books. Interestingly enough, AMR is presently owned by a venture capital organization, which, if you know anything about some venture capital companies, they take over companies and sometimes bleed them to some extent. Right. And the fire department's convinced that there's a huge profit margin here. And even with some higher costs, they can actually deliver the services at less than AMR is. I remain a little skeptical about that side of the equation. But I think that there were some people that sided with me 3 years ago on the cost side, a former CPA that has kind of looked at issues like this in the city and is now convinced that the fire department's right. They actually can do it less expensively. But the other issue, of course, Jarvis, is this would be a huge enterprise. And let me explain that. Mm-hmm. It can't be just a regular city fire department function, because we could be talking about additional revenue coming into the city of, you know, upwards, I think it's in the area of $100 million. Under the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, that would put us in all kinds of problems because we would have revenue far in excess of our growth rates. And essentially, you'd have to refund money that you really don't have to refund because you're using that money to pay for the cost of the ambulance service. Mm-hmm. So the fire department promptly wants to set up what's called an enterprise, which is we have several enterprises. Frankly, utilities is an enterprise. The taxpayers mm-hmm. don't pay it, pay for it. The ratepayers pay for it. We have right. a stormwater enterprise. People pay a stormwater fee, the tax. It's not a tax thing. We have a Pikes Peak. There's no taxpayer dollars and it's paid for people that drive up Pikes Peak. Our golf courses, it's paid for by the people that play golf. There's no taxpayer dollars that go into this. And so they would set up a enterprise where, you know, there's no taxes that go over there. Their idea is that they would go to foundations, and ask for contributions or grants to get about $9 or $10 million to make the initial investment in, ambulances that they would then pay off as revenue came in. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're talking, I think, about initially about 180 additional employees in a city of, 4,000, 5,000 employees. That's quite a bit of additional employees. Mm-hmm. The legacy costs with para contributions and things like that. And so one of the things that I suggested, because this would be such a large enterprise, it might be something you want to run by the voters.
Right.
I think the city's view is that it's pretty complex and it would be very, very hard to properly educate the voters on all the aspects of it. You know, we've been through that before, and I think we could engage the voters and have community forums and let them decide whether or not this enterprise ought to be created, and they would take on whatever financial risks are involved. Now, right. the fire department's view is that there is no taxpayer risk. If it fails as an enterprise, the city just goes back out to bid with private companies. Question is, are there private companies still interested in it at that point in time and things like that? So I do want to emphasize, Jarvis, I think this is a very serious issue. Mm. I think the fire department has done its homework. And I think if you look around the country, you'll see that more and more cities are going this direction. I remain, I'm not campaigning about this. I'm just answering questions when people like yourself ask me what my viewpoint is. I remain a little nervous about the cost side of the equation. Generally, of course, philosophically, I'm inclined if private industry can do it, that's who ought to do it. But I do acknowledge that the trend around the country is for fire departments to take over emergency transport because they can probably do it more efficiently. They tend to get there quicker. They tend to man better. And the question is, can they still do it at the same cost or at least not some unreasonable increase in cost that would offset the increased efficiencies?
Right. So just a couple of things there. So you'd mentioned penalties. So basically for the audience, if AMR doesn't get there within a certain amount of time, and if I read correctly, basically depending on the location of where it happens, depends on the response time that they have. So sometimes it's 8 minutes. If it's a more suburban area, I think it goes up to like 12 minutes. And then for rural areas, it's like 16 minutes. So basically any amount of time that they go over that, then they accrue a penalty. So that's just for some perspective there on for the audience. Now, I did read, as you mentioned, around 2021 to 2022, they incurred more penalties for being late, and they attributed that to COVID and staffing shortages and things like that. Now, I did read that from 2022 to 2023, they've actually done much better on that response time. And because they have a rate, basically they have to be above 90%. They have to get within that time limit on average of 90% or better. And I believe in 2021, 2022, they were in the 80s, which is why they accrued penalties, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I also think, frankly, that one of the reasons they've done better on fines is I think we did adjust the contracts a little bit to give them credit. If the fire department had showed up within the time frame, they get some credit for that. Because they were paying millions of dollars in fees. They were claiming that was impacting their bottom line. I think, as I say, the fire department's a little skeptical about that. They do not have an opportunity to review AMR's books. But, they are paying less fines. AMR also used to have, I think they still have, the general unincorporated county contract, but more and more communities within the county outside the city are going to department-based ambulance. For example, Manitou just did a year ago.
Yeah.
And from all accounts, they're satisfied. But this is an important issue. You know, as you framed it, you know, who can do it better, private or public? As I say, I'm typically philosophically oriented towards if the private sector can do it, they ought to be able to do it. But if the efficiency and cost factors, if the efficiency is greater and the cost factors are comparable, then it's something that you might want to think about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if I read correctly, Black Forest and Falcon also moved to doing department instead of AMR, if I'm not mistaken there.
Well, I don't know. Would that be through their volunteer fire departments?
Be. Yeah, that might be. That's possible.
That could be.
Now, I did read about Manitoua going through the public route, and I did see that they accrued about $1 million of initial startup costs, which was getting new staff and equipment in order to do it. And they increased their response time by something like 50%. I mean, it was pretty incredible. They went from like an 11-minute response time with AMR to around 5.5 minutes. Now, just for the audience who maybe is not from that area, I believe Manitoua is something like 3 square miles and like 4,700 residents, as opposed to Colorado Springs, where you're at, you know, 500,000 residents and a lot more square miles. So
yeah, cost wise, 200 square miles. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So cost wise, you know, when I think about that, I go, okay, it was about $788,000 for Manitoua for like new staffing and those things. And then I think it said $155,000 for equipment. So it brought it out to close to $1 million, all said and done. And so I think you'd have to multiply that by a whole lot, because I believe you have like something like 24 to 25 fire stations in Colorado Springs. If I'm not mistaken, I think it's around 24, 25. But, so something that I was trying to understand is, because you were talking about the enterprise and making money and it not going on the taxpayers. Is it that when you call an ambulance and an ambulance comes, that's not being paid for necessarily by taxes, even though we think of it being the public sector? Is it being paid for by basically insurance companies or by the person themselves if they don't have insurance?
Yeah. And that's an interesting point. Obviously, people that have medical insurance, their policies typically cover ambulance transport. And so a private company builds their insurance. So if the fire department took over it, frankly, private companies contract with a billing service. And I think the fire department would contract with virtually the same type of billing service.
Right.
Because it gets pretty complicated, because unfortunately, a lot of the people that are transported aren't insured and are indigent, and therefore the claim is made on Medicaid, not Medicare, but Medicaid, the indigent health care. I think Colorado Springs has a fairly healthy, as big cities go, has a fairly healthy portion of what we call commercial or insured transport. Whereas a lot of your big cities have an enormous percentage of their transport is Medicaid.
Right. So this is one of my last questions, but if I understand correctly, if the Colorado Springs Fire Department, let's say they do take this over now, because they haven't been doing the ambulance services for X amount of years, that's going to be a huge cost that they're going to have to inquire, correct? Because they're going to have to go and purchase these ambulances and things like that. And I know you mentioned they could get a grant to maybe help them out.
They have to purchase the ambulances, and under the law, the city can't give an enterprise money. Mm-hmm. Okay. And by the way, the enterprise can't give the city money.
Right.
Okay. So they have to come up with the money to, buy the ambulances, stuff like that. And obviously, what they can enter into is leases and just have some upfront money. And then they'll, as the revenue comes in, they'll pay the leases. And it's a model that has worked fairly effectively for various fire departments, but they do have to come up with some of that upfront money. And I know that the city and the fire folks have talked to a couple of foundations about either making a grant or a loan. And then, their model would show that they will pay that off fairly quickly. And, it's the questioning is their modeling correct? As I say, I think the costs are going to be more than they're projecting, but, frankly, I just had lunch with somebody from the city the other day, and they said the margin, when you take in the profit margin, they're not exactly sure what it is, but they think it's fairly substantial. The city could incur significantly higher increased personnel costs and still deliver the product cheaper. So we'll see. As I say, Jarvis, my one was concerned about the cost side of the equation, and are we really taking everything into account there? And then the other thing is, this is a pretty big step. This is going to be a big enterprise,
right?
And should we allow the voters to weigh in?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, if taking on an enterprise of this size, if ultimately it doesn't work out, which obviously you would hope it would. But if it didn't, then the question becomes, okay, do you scare away or do you disincentivize when you have to go back to do contracts down the road? Because, if there's one thing companies like AMR and any other company like is some consistency and some stability, and they don't want to do this, back and forth where they have a contract for a few years and then you change it and then back a few more years later, and then they have to come back in. So,
right. I think once they leave a community, they probably typically don't come back.
Right. Exactly. Yep. All right, sir. Well, I think you answered all my questions here. And I appreciate your position, which is, it's a complicated issue, and you shouldn't just rush into it one way or the other. And maybe you should, have the voters have a say in this.
At least have a lot more opportunity for to make sure the voters have a sense of what's actually taking place and as I say, whether it's something they want to take on.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And I think regardless of what the city decides to do, I think an education campaign on it should definitely be happening ahead of time. Because like I said, I was looking into this issue. I only found a couple articles. Didn't find a whole lot of input other than that. I mean, I haven't heard anything about it other than a few handful of articles. And it looks like I think April 2025 is when the actual contract ends. So it's still technically a year away, but obviously they're already talking about it now.
That's not long when you're thinking about,
right.
A year is not long when you're thinking about putting together a new ambulance service.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, okay, Mr. Southers, I appreciate your time, sir, and I know the audience appreciates it very much. And maybe down the road we will we'll have you back on here maybe a year from now to figure out what actually ended up happening or is going to happen.
Okay. Thank you, Jarvis.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for listening to the Engage the Rockies podcast, your go-to podcast for local and state issues concerning Colorado.